Welcome to the Compact Camera Podcast. It's bright, it's breezy, it's to the point. So grab yourself a coffee and come and join us for some photo talk. Thanks for joining us on this very first Compact Camera Podcast. We aim to be exactly what it says in the title, compact. There are so many good photographic podcasts out there covering a wide variety of subjects. We aim to be a little bit more like meeting a friend for just one cup of coffee in a cafe, having a chat before moving on to your next appointment. My name's Rob. I'm a documentary photographer based in North Wales, and I'm going to be reaching out to friends who I've met online and in real life for a chat, alerting you to new opportunities, calls for entry, exhibitions and photo books. Coming up in this edition, a print offer from Lucy Purrington. Preview of Danwood's new landmark book. Calls for entry and where you can find them. And a chat with documentary photographer Mick Critchlow. I had the pleasure recently of meeting Lucy Purrington at Photo Gallery in Cardiff. We're both taking part in the Many Voices One Nation 2 exhibition there. By the way, once these restrictions are lifted and the exhibition continues, if you're in the Cardiff area, please do try and take a look. There's some very strong and varied work by 12 different photographers for you to enjoy. Lucy's based in the South Wales Valleys. She's an artist that works through the medium of photography. I'd call her work certainly avant-garde. She often uses herself as a model, so it's self-portraiture in a lot of her work. And she places herself in the context of the rugged landscape of her home, the South Wales Valleys. I guess because her work touches on issues of mental health, it conveys a certain sense of vulnerability. One technique and feature of Lucy's photography is the use of lengths of fabric, sometimes brightly coloured, sometimes black, sometimes white. Sometimes she will cocoon herself in the fabric, again denoting protection. But more recently, in a series about the flooding experienced in the South Wales Valleys, she's elegantly draped fabric along the hillsides. It's fantastic work. And I've recently taken delivery of two lovely prints from Lucy. She currently has a sale on, and I urge you to go and have a look at her website. You can simply Google her name, Lucy Purrington. That's P-U-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. But I am also leaving a link for this in the episode description. Do have a look. Now, every era has its iconic documentary photographers and work that we link directly with those times when we think back. We're very fortunate in Wales at the moment. We do have our own national treasure, and that's Dan Wood. Now, Dan's latest book is part of a trilogy, he says. His first book was the acclaimed Suicide Machine, which was a portrait of his hometown and area of Bridgend in South Wales. Definitely an overlooked place, and I do enjoy documenting overlooked places. They're a kind of source of documentary gold for a lot of us. But Suicide Machine, as the title suggests, was shot in the backdrop of an alarming amount of suicides amongst young people. But it contains some superb new topographic images. And what I really like about Dan, in fact, it's one of his hallmarks, a good sprinkling of quirky images, things that do catch your eye. And, of course, some first-class portraits of the young and the old, all added to make a wonderful package and a fantastic, rich narrative. And then, of course, came Gap in the Hedge, and I think this is a landmark book in Welsh documentary history. I absolutely love it. It's more of a pilgrimage, where Dan used to go as a young boy with his parents, a village way up in the hills called Bulch y Clawdd. And it's an object lesson in long-form documentary photography, much like all of Dan's work. Many rolls of film shot, and a painstaking amount of research has gone into this project. So it's no surprise when I find that Dan's third book, the final part of this trilogy, has contained the same amount of painstaking research and work. 2.5 years in the making, he says, and 210 rolls of film. Now, I know that Dan shoots 6x7. That's 10 exposures per film. Do the maths. That's a lot of frames and a lot of processing costs, and he has funded this entirely himself. And for this project, Dan turns his lens back on his home community and town of Bridgend, or more specifically the Afon Ogwr, the river Ogmore that flows through the town, and his family's relationship over the generations with that river and its journey. The title for the book, Black Was the River You See, comes from his grandfather. And I'm always interested to see how text is incorporated into photo books. It's something I'm weighing up myself. Dan has had poetry and text from professional authors contributed towards this book. I think a lot of purists will talk about images containing all the narrative and asking questions of the viewer, and that's absolutely valid. But I think a little bit of writing can help guide the viewer on their journey through the photograph and through the whole project. So why not? I'm looking forward to seeing what balance is struck in his new book. And it's available now for pre-order from Kozu Books. I'll put a link again in the description for this episode. But if you want to visit Dan's own website, and I'll put a link there too, it contains a beautiful set of preview images from the book. I mean, do take a look. You'll be very impressed. Now, I do apologise for the cliche, but photography is a little bit of a journey. It certainly is for me, and it's one I want to bring everybody along with me on. I mean, even David Hearn says he's still learning. And that's why I want to help photographers, many people producing individual good images, and want to take that next step forward on their journey to grow their photography and ultimately get more fun from what they're doing. That's when I really want to persuade people to start working in terms of series. It's a frightening step for many, it really is. But then when you add a narrative through a set of cohesive images, then each image then gains a lot of value and strength for that. And then once you have a completed project or even a short series that adds up, you then have something that's ready to submit, and that's where the real fun begins. Whether it's something as humble as a website feature, an Instagram feature, or a student zine, perhaps at the very highest level a national competition, but do make sure it's a free competition. It's okay to pay occasionally if you know what you're doing, but do be aware they're there to make money out of you. By the way, a lot of information on that. And a good website to visit is the UN of Photography, along with a very, very good informed podcast by Grant Scott, who has an amazing amount of experience in photography, commissioning work at the very highest level. We do recommend you go and visit him and listen to his podcasts. So I'm going to try and alert you to some of the calls for entry that catch my attention on the internet and through friends. I do suggest that you join the community on Twitter as well. It's very friendly and very close-knit, and you'll find people sharing information as well as on Instagram as well. I'd like to start by recommending a very general open call by Fleur and Arbor. That's Fleurand. Arbor. That's their Twitter handle. It's run by the lovely Jasmine and Olivia, and they are doing this out of the goodness of their hearts, and they're trying to support the arts, and that certainly includes photography, creative writing, and with the current lockdown at the moment, they're doing as much as they can to encourage people to promote their own well-being under these really difficult conditions. Their website is very uplifting. Just take a good look through it to get a feel for the content. And if you feel moved to provide anything, writing, photography, art, please do get in touch with them. One website worth bookmarking is Shutterhub. That's Shutter, H-U-B. They're a membership organisation, but many of their calls are open to non-members. Their website has a page called Opportunities, and they have a list of historic open calls there and upcoming calls. So definitely worth keeping across. I have a really good photographer friend in Germany called Christina Stone. We try and tip each other off about any calls for entry, any opportunities. And she came up with one recently. It's from Instagram. It's called Hinterlands Magazine. So that's Hinterlands _magazine. They have an unusual call for entries at the moment. It's for a second issue, and it's on the theme of orange. Their first issue was apparently on the theme of blue. They write, after delving into the blue, the second issue of Hinterlands will search for rural realities in orange, bright and garish, or earthy and warm. Orange evokes manifold associations on rural life. certainly worth having a look through your archive. And I guess I'm pretty lazy. I should tag more of my pictures with colours. In fact, tag more of my pictures a little bit more generally. But have a look. You may have some work that would fit the open call perfectly. Personal highlight for me towards the end of 2020 was having 5 images published in the inaugural edition of Workhouse magazine. That's produced by the Workhorse Collective. The theme was the artificial, but there was a vast, eclectic mix of photography from collages, abstract, portraiture, still life, and of course the new topographics that I really enjoy. Now, straight on the back of the success of the first issue, they've gone straight into issue number 2 with an open call for submissions. And from their website it says, "With the UK entering another COVID lockdown and many people across the world facing restrictions and changes to daily life, we want to invite photographers and writers to make new work in response to the moment and to the words still life." So there's your theme. The submission deadline is February the 18th, 2021. There's more information on their website. That's workhorsecollective.co.uk. And finally, an opportunity from Invisible Britain. I describe Invisible Britain as a project with a social conscience. They published a highly successful book a couple of years ago, and they're well on their way to publishing a second edition this year, one to watch. But in the meantime, they have an active Instagram account, and there's a call for entries at the moment on the theme of hidden. You're invited to submit 3 images that fit that brief. You can do that by direct message, but whatever you do, they're definitely worth a follow. And as with all the opportunities and people I've mentioned in this podcast, I'll be leaving links in the episode guide. Well, this is the Compact Camera Podcast, and I'm starting to regret that name already because we could chat with our first guest for literally hours. Mick Critchlow has had over 40 years' experience documenting his community in the northeast of England. From a family with generations of coal mining in the blood, Mick went his own way and joined the Merchant Navy for about 7 years before returning home, enrolling on an arts course and documenting life in Ashington and the surrounding area. Mick's been widely published and exhibited. He's a bit of a national treasure, I think. And his features include, well, features in Creative Camera, the BJP, and The Guardian. He's had a very long and close relationship with the Side Gallery in Newcastle and taken part in many solo and group exhibitions throughout the UK and the world. Mick's images appear in many books, and his solo photo books include Seaman, and that was about the NUS strike between 1988 and 1989. That was published in 2013. Hearst, looking at his local area in 2018, and a monumental book. I've just taken delivery of it. I've unwrapped it and looked at it today. It's on the coffee table. Wow. Coal Town, published in 2019 by Blue Coat Press. Hey, Mick, thanks for joining us. First question for you, how's lockdown going over there?
Hi there, Robert. Thanks very much for inviting me here.
Yeah. You're very welcome.
Lockdown, well, you know, it's we're nearly there, 12 months, isn't it?
Are you managing to stay creative? Are you getting about with your camera?
Yeah, I'm getting about now and then, you know, but my wife's got a lot of health problems, so I'm trying to shield her as well, you know, so I don't get out as much as I would like to, really.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But yes, yeah, so, you know, I'm staying fairly creative at the moment by scanning my work and sort of dipping into my archive and stuff, you know.
That's so time consuming scanning, isn't it?
Oh yeah. You lose the will to live really at times.
And spotting, getting rid of the dust, and
Well, you know, my negatives are fairly clean anyway, so it's just not that much of a task, and it's very relaxing, really, you know. For me to do that.
Are they mainly 35mm or medium format?
It's 35mm, it's 6x6, 6x7, 5x4. I've shot most formats my time, really.
Fantastic. You know? Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful. Hey, listen, I was thinking, you know, there's probably never a better time at the moment to be a documentary photographer, I think, as it could be a golden age with Brexit going on and the COVID crisis, of course. Now, a lot of your work that we connect you with was done in the 70s and 80s. You were very close, embedded within your, you know, your local communities. Did you feel at that time that there was change due? Did you feel on the cusp of change, you know, with the industry and communities? Did you have that sense? What was it like to be a photographer at that time?
Well, I didn't really set out to be a photographer. So it was just a case of me, while I was at college, just looking around my own local areas. So I was just photographing people that I knew and places that I knew, which I thought were sort of fairly quickly disappearing, really. A lot of the factories and stuff were closing down, and I had an interest in going into the factories to photograph people's workplaces and lifestyles, you know. So it was just a case of going out into my own community and just seeing what was going on, really.
Yeah, I was reading the preamble about Ashington Colliery in your book, and it was a sort of an institution that put its arms around the whole community, wasn't it, with education, healthcare?
Yes, very much so. It was a very sort of paternalistic company. You know, they owned the workplace, they owned the housing, they owned the local shops. They actually, and at one time, I think it was in the early 1900s, they actually paid with their own money, with tokens. So the miners those days, they were restricted. There wasn't any pubs in the town at the time because the actual owner of the mine was a Quaker. And they were paid out in tokens, which had to be spent in the company store, you know. So it was very, very much they were tied to the workplace. If you lost your job in the mines, you would lose your house. If someone was killed in the mines, the widow would be thrown out the house. You only had a colliery house if you had some sort of link to the workplace.
I think through your photography, you can really feel a massive community sort of cohesion, a bit of warmth there, a lot of warmth there, I should say. Is that still there today?
Not so much, Robert. When I started out taking photographs in the town, there was a great community spirit. Everyone worked in the mines. Everyone either worked in the mines or knew people who worked in the mines, or the ancillary industries around the town who supplied the coal mines. Everybody had that sense of camaraderie, really, with the workplace, and that went beyond that. In their leisure activities, you know, they'd go to the club with their friends from work, and it was the same sort of crack, if you like.
I love the dog racing pictures in your book. Fantastic.
Well, yeah, the whippet racing. Yeah, I did that for about 12 months.
Oh, fantastic!
One of my uncles, he raced his dogs at the same clubs. I used to use my family to get into different situations and different groups, you know. There was my uncle with the whippets, and there was my cousin who was one of the leaders at the sea coal camp down in Lynemouth. He asked me to go down there and take photographs, and that turned into a 3-year project. And then Chris Killip, I sort of passed the baton on to Chris in 1983 for that. It was all to do with community. You know, I'm a community based photographer. Really.
And you've done it so well. I mean,
yes. I've stuck at it for 40 odd years now. You know, so 40 yeah, plus
but,
years.
But it takes a certain amount of character and empathy to gain people's trust, and that's clear from your work, which bounces on to a question for people sort of documenting what I call the now. In that vast amount of experience you've had, any common mistakes you see other people making or any sort of tips you want to pass on to aspiring documentary photographers?
Well, I think, you know, for any up-and-coming sort of documentary photographers, they've got to stick by their convictions, really, and embed themselves within the subject that they're studying. It's no good just turning up for a couple of days and disappearing. You've got to really stick with it. You know, a short term project to me is probably about two or three years. You know, I've set out on projects where it's supposed to be 2 weeks, and I've worked for 2 years on it. You know,
and I was going to ask you on that point because I think with social media. A friend of mine, Hugh Alden Davis, who's a lecturer in Carmarthen, gave this expression: people seem to want to feed the machine. You know, they have a sort of compulsion to post on social media all the time and create work. Yeah. Is it okay to actually take a break, put your camera down, and pick it up later on?
Yeah, I took a break for almost 10 years. I was still getting out and about with my camera, but I was... I wasn't doing any sort of project work as such, and that's what happened when I turned 40 in 1995, you know. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Mick, is you photographed in some boisterous places. I've seen some pictures of yours on Twitter, some cracking pictures taken sort of late evenings in social clubs with a bit of tomfoolery and hijinks going around. Tell us about your experience in that kind of atmosphere.
Well, I'm one of the locals, you know, so I take my, you know, people think, you know, if I turn up somewhere on a night out and I haven't got my camera, they think, well, you know, what's happening with Mick here, you know. So people like, you know, people see me with the camera, they get used to me with the camera.
And you manage to keep the camera dry?
Oh, yes, always. I, you know, I always guard my gear. But I travel light anyway, you know, so... it's always discreet.
Fantastic. It's quite a skill, yeah. I think. And people obviously know your face.
They do, yes. No, the only time I've had trouble really is the past few years, really, just with youngsters. The town's changed, you know. There's a lot of drugs and, you know, there's a lot of kids, you know, it's just, you know, they don't know me. All they see, you know, I'm 66 in March, you know. All they see is an old fellow with a camera, you know. And they, of course, they, you know, they sometimes get the wrong idea.
I find a bit more self-conscious, particularly when there are young people or children around now. And I'm worried that a generation of children growing up that aren't documented.
That's right.
Look at the work of Tish Murthy, people.
I'm always aware of that now, you know. And I'll not photograph them if there are any kids around.
That's sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Whereas before, you know, people had a different attitude. Of course, people knew me. You know, I would photograph kids down my own street, you know, and, you know, the neighbours knew me and they knew I was a photographer. Always with permission, you know, I would always ask first. So, yeah, it's a difficult time for any sort of documentation of childhood. It's very difficult.
Yeah, so moving right to today, what are you working on at the moment? Have you got any present plans or future plans, new projects? I think you're working on something called Seafarers.
Yeah, that's just a working title at the moment. You know, I think you mentioned in your introduction, you know, I did a book on the National Union of Seamen strike. And it was just called Seamen, you know. So, you know, that was exhibited at the side in 87. And they put together it was commissioned by SIDE originally. It was a major commission through them. So, you know, I'm busy scanning that work. I'm also working on something for one of the local museums, which is closed down at the moment, obviously, because of the COVID. And hopefully I should be having a retrospective there at the end of the year if all things go well. Doing work towards my work going into the local art, you know, the Northumberland Archive.
Fantastic.
I'm doing a deal at the moment with them for them to purchase my archive.
They should bite your hand off, Mick.
I want the work to stay local, you know, which is important to me, that the work stays within the Northumberland area in its entirety, you know.
Yeah, I was watching a presentation recently just before Christmas by Raymond Depardon. He's offered his complete archive on Glasgow to the city, which is just like amazing.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it goes back to community again.
Well, Mick, I'm going to call this interview to an end. I think we could just talk for hours and hours. It's been fascinating talking to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Robert. It's been a pleasure.
And of course, we've put a link to Mick's website in this episode guide. It's an excellent website, by the way, and we certainly recommend a look at the Coal Town book. It's definitely one to treasure and keep on your coffee table. And what a way to end a podcast. A million thanks again to Mick Critchlow for his contribution. That was wonderful. And thanks to all of you for listening. Now, I'm going to depend on your feedback through the usual social media channels over the next few days. So please let me know what you think about this first inaugural episode of the Compact Camera Podcast. I'm Rob. Please join us again. I will let you know when that'll be. And please do stay safe.